To 1 Samuel this morning. The books of Samuel, we have two of them, also have 2 Kings and 2 Chronicles, are the historical Old Testament books that record the establishment of Israel's kingdom. And we learn here, as we read these books, as the proverb said, righteousness exalteth a nation, but sin is a reproach to any people. That's Proverbs 14:34. Certainly we see that as we read 1 and 2 Samuel, 1 and 2 Kings, 1 and 2 Chronicles. Today we're going to be in 1 Samuel with the theme of leadership. We're already seeing in the nation as a whole that righteousness exalt them, but sin is a reproach to them. In these books we find recorded specifically the stories of their leaders, and we find this about those leaders, that righteousness does exalt them, but sin is a reproach to them. Today I want to look at 1 Samuel, seeing Samuel and then Saul and then David. And as we consider the good and the bad of these leaders, I hope it'll become evident to you, as we've seen it throughout the Old Testament so far, that David was not the leader that Israel needed. Saul was not the leader that Israel needed. Samuel, the last of the judges and a prophet for the nation, was not the leader that Israel needed. God was the leader that Israel needed. So let's pray together, and then we'll begin looking together at Samuel here in 1 Samuel chapter number 1. Father, thank you for your word. Thank you for this time that we have together in it. We ask for your blessing upon it today. Lord, I pray that the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in your sight. Lord, my strength and my redeemer. This I pray in Jesus' name. Amen. Samuel's story begins with Hannah, his mother. Let's pick up our reading in chapter number 1, verse number 5. But unto Hannah he gave a worthy portion, for he loved Hannah, but the Lord had shut up her womb. And her adversary also provoked her sore, for to make her fret, because the Lord had shut up her womb. Hannah longed to have a child, and she so longed to have a child that she made a vow to the Lord in regards to this. Notice verse number 10. And she was in bitterness of soul, and prayed unto the Lord, and wept sore. In fact, we know that the high priest Eli noticed her there praying, and what did he think about her when he saw her praying? That she had come to church drunk that day. I think that of you guys sometimes. In verse number 11 it reads, and she vowed a vow and said, O Lord of hosts, if thou wilt indeed look on the affliction of thine handmaid and remember me and not forget thine handmaid, but will give unto thine handmaid a man-child, then I will give him unto the Lord all the days of his life, and there shall be no razor come upon his head. So we have two vows here. One would be that of a Nazarite. There will be no razor come upon his head. And then that would be, the other would be that of, I'll give him back to you. And boy, that was a serious vow that she made there, and she kept it. Certainly we take those vows to an extent around the church here. When a baby is born, the mother and father at some point usually bring them before the church. And myself and Brother Rye will lay hands on the baby, not in any salvation manner, just simply in a notice of saying to the Lord, we thank you, we recognize this life's come from you, and here before the witness of the church, we present this child back to you and dedicate this baby's life to you. And as parents, we are saying we will raise them in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord, meaning at home, we'll read the Word, we'll teach them the Word, we'll teach them how to pray, and we will bring them to church where they can fellowship with the believers and be raised up under the Word of God. And this is a simplified form of what Hannah is saying here, but Hannah's vow is so much more, and she says, I'll completely give him back to you, and that's what she does. In verse number 20, we see that God grants this vow, and later she gives birth to Samuel. Notice verse number 20. Wherefore it came to pass when the time was come about after Hannah had conceived, then she bare a son and called his name Samuel, saying, because I have asked him of the Lord. And then in verse 27 and 28, she keeps her vow once the child is old enough. She says, for this child I prayed, and the Lord hath given me my petition, which I ask of him. Therefore also I have lent him to the Lord. As long as he liveth, he shall be lent to the Lord. And he worshipped the Lord there. So she did present that child back, and he was to become a child servant there in the temple. In chapter number 2, we have a contrasting account. So in chapter 1, we have Hannah and her husband Elkanah, and they are very spiritual. They come to the temple for their worship at the right times, and they do the right things. Even when God finally blesses her with a child, she gives that baby back to the Lord. In chapter number 2, in contrast of this total surrender received by Hannah, we find Eli, who is actually the spiritual leader. He is the high priest. When I tell you this story, it should be that the spiritual leader was doing right, and maybe God's people weren't doing right, and he was a good example to them. But we find about these leaders that it was usually the opposite, and certainly it was here. Eli the high priest had 2 sons, and his sons were very sinful. Notice chapter 2, verse 12. Now the sons of Eli were sons of Belial. They knew not the Lord. And Eli refuses to deal with them, so God kills his sons. But there is Samuel, who Hannah has presented back to God, who is under the service of Eli there in the temple. And he will be raised up in their place to serve God. Notice verse 34 and 35. This shall be a sign unto thee. This shall come upon thy 2 sons. Those are Eli's sons. On Hophni and Phinehas. In one day they shall die, both of them. And thou will raise me up a faithful priest that shall do according to that which is in mine heart and in my mind. And I will build him a sure house, and he shall walk before mine anointed forever. Then in chapter number 3, we have the story of Samuel's calling by God. So here's Samuel. He's living there with Eli, serving under him as a child, as the high priest. We guess that he's somewhere between 10 and 15 years old here in chapter number 3, and God calls him. Now, Samuel has been around the house of God for a while now, but still he had not experienced the personal call of God in his life. This is a very unique story in the scriptures. I want you to notice this with me in chapter number 3, verse number 4. Right off the bat, as God begins to speak to him, he is submissive enough to answer, but he just assumes that it is Eli. Notice chapter 3, verse 4. That the Lord called Samuel, and he answered, "Here am I." And he ran unto Eli and said, "Here am I, for thou called me." And he said, "I called not. Lie down again." And he went and lay down. And the Lord called yet again Samuel, and Samuel arose and went to Eli and said, "Here am I, for thou did call me." And he answered, "I called not, my son. Lie down again." Now Samuel did not yet know the Lord, neither was the word of the Lord yet revealed unto him. And the Lord called Samuel again the third time, and he arose and went to Eli and said, "Here am I, for thou did call me." And Eli perceived that the Lord had called the child. Therefore Eli said unto Samuel, "Go, lie down. And it shall be, if he call thee, thou shalt say, 'Speak, Lord, for thy servant heareth.'" So Samuel went and lay down in his place, and the Lord came and stood and called as at other times, "Samuel, Samuel." Then Samuel answered, "Speak, for thy servant heareth." And the Lord said unto Samuel, "Behold, I will do a thing in Israel, at which both the ears of everyone that heareth it shall tingle. And that day will I perform against Eli all the things which I have spoken concerning his house. When I begin, I will also make an end." So now we have Samuel. And it is great to see God working directly, even with a child. And I think we should be perceptive of that in our own assembly and in our own homes, that there will come a time in those child's lives where God will begin to deal with them. And there is no age that the Bible puts on whether we should forbid that or allow that. That is between the child and God. But we should encourage them. We should keep a conversation open in our homes and in our Sunday school classes and in our assembly for these children to know that when the Lord begins to deal with you, you answer Him. And you do as He tells you to. And that'll lead to salvation for the child and baptism into our assembly. And we're thankful that God does. God dealt with me as a child. You may have been saved as an adult, but if you were saved as a child, you understand what a special time that is. And boy, we try to make it a very special time for the children around here. We also see the importance of a good godly home. And boy, if you've got a home, assume all of you came from somewhere this morning, let God be first there. Whether it's just you or you and a spouse or you and a spouse and some children, whoever it might be in your home, you can see the contrast here between Eli's home and Hannah's home. Boy, how much more blessed it was that Hannah was completely submitted to the Lord. Let it be that way in your home. So now we have Samuel, the last of the judges and the first national prophet of Israel. Samuel comes on to become the man who later anoints Saul as king and also David as king of Israel. As you move into chapter 4 through 7, we've had 3 important and unique events in Israel's history. In chapter number 4, due to Israel's sin, God's glory departs from them. And we learn about this through the Ark of the Covenant being stolen away. And this is where the term comes to us, Ichabod. Have you heard the term Ichabod? Not Ichabod Crane, who lived in Creepy Hollow, but Ichabod, which means the glory has departed. In chapter number 5, we see God's name defended by God among the Philistines who've taken the ark. They just put it with the rest of their religious relics. This is just one more God. This is just one more religion. This is just one more thing for us to worship. Boy, do we ever live in that day and age where there are many roads to God. There are many ways to be right with God. There are many different religions. There are many different types to ways to worship inside those religions. And we just know that that is not true. And here, before the Philistines, God lets them know the Ark of the Covenant is not like every other thing that you've set up. And if you didn't read that story, it's a wonderful story. They have a god named Dagon, and God knocks him over. And his hands fall off, and his legs fall. It's a unique story. It's great. In chapter number 6, the Ark is then returned to Israel. In chapter number 7, with the Ark returned, we find Israel sort of back to just their old times. They've got a judge seeing over them, which is the way it's been for a lot of years during the time of the judges. Samuel is that judge, and he is working with Israel for them to return to the Lord. So they have the glory returned, the ark, and they are returning to the Lord under the leadership and the ministry of their prophet and judge, Samuel. In chapter number 8, we begin to be introduced to Saul. In chapters 8, 9, and 10, Israel wants a king, and God gives them Saul as their king. Notice chapter 8, verse number 4. Then all the elders of Israel gathered themselves together and came to Samuel at Ramah and said unto him, Behold, thou art old. Well, that's how you want to be referred to right off the bat, isn't it? I mean, look, we've got an idea here. We need you to do something for us. And basically it's because we think you're too old to help us anymore. And thy sons walk not in thy ways. Now make us a king to judge us like all the nations. Parents, didn't you love that when your kids came to you with that? I want this. Why do you want this? Because everybody else has it. I want to do this. Why do you want it? Because everybody else is doing it. And what do you say right behind that? If everybody else was going to, I don't know how we came up with that, but we all say it. And I grew up near a place called Lake Lanier, Lake Sidney Lanier in Gainesville, Georgia. There's a song about it, a poem about it, I think. And we jumped off bridges for fun. It's just what we did. It's a great big deep lake, and you'd climb out, go across a bridge, and jump off. We were back home for the funeral last week, and we go across one of the bridges, and there's a sign that says, no jumping off the bridge. And Jack said, you mean people really jump off the bridge? I just ignored him because I needed to say to him later in his life, if all your friends were jumping off the bridge, would you do it too? Because we used to. Our friends would jump off, and we'd jump off as well. Verse 5, and said unto him, Behold, thou art old, and thy sons walk not in thy ways. Now make us a king to judge us like all the nations. Israel's not like all the other nations. They have a God who is not like the gods of the other nations. God does not intend this for them. Notice verse 6. But the thing displeased Samuel when they said, Give us a king to judge us. And Samuel prayed unto the Lord. And the Lord said unto Samuel, Hearken unto the voice of the people and all that they say unto thee, for they have not rejected thee, but they have rejected me, that I should not reign over them. Boy, that's a sad verse, isn't it? According to all the works which they have done since the day that I brought them out of Egypt, even unto this day, wherewith they have forsaken me and served other gods, so do they also unto thee. Now therefore hearken unto their voice, howbeit they protest solemnly unto them, yet protest solemnly unto them, and show them the manner of the king that shall reign over them. Now we've already known that God was to be Israel's king and not man. Samuel reminds Israel of this, and we learn that while this goes against what God intends, he will permit it, but it comes to them at a cost. Notice chapter 8, verse 18. And ye shall cry out in that day because of your king, which ye shall have chosen you, and the Lord will not hear you in that day. Do you see the great cost that it comes? God says, if they want a king, let them have a king. Samuel, they've not refused you, they refused me, God says. So let them do it, but I want you to warn them. That king is going to tax them. That king is going to take their daughters for his wives. He's going to take their sons as his servants. He is going to take more than they're willing to pay to get the king that they have. And there's going to come a time when they're going to cry out to me against the king that they've asked me to put over them. And what does it say there? I will not hear them in that day. So they'll get what they want, but they're going to lose what they have. They're going to lose something very important to them, and that is being able to cry out to God. Well, Saul becomes king. Saul is a perfect candidate initially for Israel's king. When we remember Saul, we don't always remember him in the positive sense. We remember him for the negative things, because the king that we remember in the positive sense in Israel is David. We remember King David, the great and mighty. Saul has slain his thousands, but David has slain his 10,000s, Israel cried in the streets. In fact, the girls of Israel cried this. You know, all the pretty girls said, "Boy, we love David." And Saul was jealous of this. But I wanted you to know that initially, Saul was not bitter. Initially, Saul was not filled with pride. Initially, Saul was exactly what you would want out of a national leader. In chapter number 9, verse 21, we see that he was humble. And Saul answered and said, "Am I not a Benjamite, of the smallest of the tribes of Israel, and my family the least of all the tribes of Benjamin? Wherefore then speakest thou so to me?" He says, What do you mean I'm going to be the king? I'm humble. He was humble here. In chapter number 10, verse number 9, we find that Saul, I just found that one of my children drew me a picture and left it in my Bible here in 1 Samuel for me this morning. That was not part of the sermon. It's a guy watching TV, and on the TV screen is a guy watching TV, and on his TV screen is a guy watching TV, on his TV screen is a guy watching TV. It just goes on and on and on. In chapter number 10, verse number 9, we find that God gives him a new heart. And it was so that when he had turned back to go from Samuel, God gave him another heart. And all those signs came to pass that day. Verse 10, he received spiritual power through God's Spirit. And when they came thither to the hill, behold, a company of prophets met him. And the Spirit of God came upon him, and he prophesied among them. Chapter 10, verse 23, we learn that Saul has a strong body. And they ran and fetched him thence. And when he stood among the people, he was higher than any of the people from his shoulders and upward. Verse number 26, we find that he was surrounded by loyal friends. And Saul also went home to Gibeah, and there went with him a band of men whose hearts God had touched. So God is blessing here. It's not what God intended, but it is what God is allowing. And in God allowing this, he is blessing Israel through this. In chapters 11 and 12, we find some of the greatest blessing. Samuel and Saul are working together. Saul the prophet, or Saul the king, Samuel the prophet, they are rededicating the nation of Israel back to God. And that's a good thing. Chapters 13 through 15, though, things begin to slide downhill for Saul's reign. In chapter number 13, he is not patient. In verse 8, 9, 11, and 13, I'm not going to read them for sake of time. You can go in and see how he doesn't wait on Samuel. He doesn't wait on God for a thing to happen that should happen. He goes and does it on his own. And we learn from that sometimes we just want to go ahead and do what we know is going to be done anyway, or what we know is going to be right. But just because a thing is God's will, it doesn't mean that it's the time for that to be God's will. We have to have God's will and God's timing working together for a thing to be right with God. And this is the first instance of Saul sinning and beginning to lose the kingdom that God gives to him. And it comes through his lack of patience. In chapter number 14, we see Saul's pride. And it goes against even his own son, Jonathan. He's jealous and he is prideful and he's built up in himself. And God does not like this. In chapter number 15, he is just completely disobedient to God in his actions. So for all of this, the kingdom will be taken from Saul, and it will be given to David. In chapter 16 through 31, as we close out the book, we see King David in his early life. In chapter number 16, David is anointed king in his youth. In verse number 1, God tells Samuel to go to Jesse, to his house, to find the new king. Notice chapter 16, verse 1. "And the Lord said unto Samuel, How long wilt thou mourn for Saul, seeing I have rejected him from reigning over Israel? Fill thine horn with oil and go, and I will send thee to Jesse the Bethlehemite, for I have provided me a king from among his sons." And you know how this story goes. He shows up to the house, and in come the sons, except for David, who's out watching the sheep. And boy, they are tall, and they are strong, and they are smart, and they are handsome, and they are all, man, they're a lot like Saul. But God refuses every single one of them. And Samuel asks him, he says, do you not have any other sons? He said, well, the baby. The little teenage boy, David, who we made to stay out and watch the sheep so that you could see the real men in this house. And he says, well, have him to come in. And here comes little David. And God says, that's the one. And he anoints him to be king. And he doesn't just become king. They don't march him right up into the kingdom. But it is set to be that he will be Israel's king. David is such an example to us of one useful to God. Do you want to be useful to God? I just want God to be able to take Chance Strickland and do whatever he needs to do with me, through me, whatever. I just want to be useful to God. We learn in David's life that he is obedient, that he is humble. Though Samuel had come to the house, Samuel was well known. He had been a prophet and a judge in the nation of Israel. He kind of was like a circuit riding preacher, what we would remember in our more recent history. He would go from place to place, giving the word of the Lord and judging over the nation. So people knew about him. He had some fame and some popularity. People liked Samuel. They mourned when he dies. But though Samuel had come to the house, David stayed in the field and watched the sheep. Do you remember being young and you didn't always get to do what the adults got to do? And sometimes you had to do something you didn't want to do while the adults were doing something you did want to do. You know, like you had to go to bed when the adults stayed up and ate popcorn and watched movies or something like that. You know, you want to do what the grown folks did? Here's little David, but he's obedient. His daddy says, you stay and you watch these sheep. And he does until they call for him. He's humble. He doesn't say, you know, I'm a man just like the rest of these jokers. Let me go up there and meet with Samuel. I'm sure he wanted to lay eyes on him. But he's a good example. He begins as a servant, but he becomes the nation's king. He is faithful over his few sheep. And God allows that faithfulness to grow into him being the shepherd over that kingdom, over the nation of Israel. Chapter 16 ends. David, who's not yet king, becomes Saul's servant. He serves under the kingship of King Saul. Chapter number 17, what story do we have? David and Goliath, that's one that we all know. And it's a good story. And I don't want to undermine that story at all. It's just wonderful, you know. Boy takes down the giant, slaying giants in our life. But I don't ever want you to miss the main point of this story. It's not about you slaying giants in your life. It's not about I am weak and through the power of God I can conquer a mighty foe. Chapter number 17, verse number 46 tells us exactly what this chapter and this story is all about. Would you notice that with me? After the slaying of the giant, here's what it said. This day will the Lord deliver me, or this is right before. This is David kind of giving his victory speech. Thee into mine hand, and I will smite thee and take thine head from thee, and I will give the carcasses of the host of the Philistines this day unto the fowls of the air and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. Well, this just, for me, just culminates the whole speech of David was a good example of what we must be like for God to use us. David wasn't saying, I'm pretty good with my slingshot here. I'm going to take down this giant so everybody knows that I'm as strong as my brothers, that everybody knows that I've been anointed king instead of Saul. He says, no, so that all the world may know that there is a God in Israel. Shouldn't that be our motivation in life? Shouldn't that be how we operate? Chapter number 18, 19, 20, and 21, we find Saul turning against David, and David has to go into exile. He just wants to kill him. Saul comes to realize that God has taken the kingdom from him and that he is giving it to David, and he can't stand David. Jonathan is very helpful to keep David alive. In chapter 22, 23, 24, we see David's relationship with God forged through that time of trial. So don't ever begrudge God when he sends you through something that you don't understand why. Here's David. He's already been anointed king. You know, for a boy like him, this is like winning the lottery. You know, you're set for the rest of your life. But several years go by before he takes the throne, and he goes through running for his life, being hungry and having nothing to eat. He just goes through some really, really hard times for not a brief amount of time, for a rather long amount of time. Why? He learns through this that God will guide his steps, that God will protect his life, that God will give him grace. And he needed to learn those things before he began to sit on that throne and have things easy for him. God let it be hard for him to start with. We need to learn that in our own lives. In all of this time, David is true to God, and he remains loyal even to Saul, because Saul is the king that God has put up over him. Boy, that must have been hard to do, especially for David. But we learn there, when God has put a leader in our path, that we remain loyal and true until God moves in a different way. In chapter number 25, we read about the death of Samuel. And we read about the story of David and Abigail. Good story there. Notice just chapter 25, verse number 1. And Samuel died, and all the Israelites were gathered together and lamented him and buried him in his house in Ramah. And David arose and went down to the wilderness of Paran. And then in chapters 26 through 31, we have the end of Saul and the beginning of King David. In chapter 26, Saul is filled with hatred, but David is filled with love. Very contrasting characters here. In chapter 27 through 30, there's a sharp contrast between the darkness that Saul has given himself over to. He just allows his bitterness and his hatred to build up in his life, and it takes him down, down, down. But here is David. He's being patient. He is being understanding, and it begins to bring him up, up, up. So Saul gives himself over to the darkness. David lives unto the light. In chapter number 31, we find the death of Saul, Israel's first king. Notice with me chapter 31, verse number 8. And it came to pass on the morrow, when the Philistines came to strip the slain, that they found Saul and his three sons fallen in Mount Gilboa. And they cut off his head and stripped off his armor and sent into the land of the Philistines round about to publish it in the house of their idols among the people. And they put his armor in the house of Ashtaroth, and they fastened his body to the wall in Beth Ashan. And when the inhabitants of Jabesh Gilead heard of that which the Philistines had done to Saul, all the valiant men arose and went all night and took the body of Saul and the bodies of his sons from the wall in Beth Shan and came to Jabesh and burnt them there. And they took their bones and buried them under a tree at Jabesh and fasted 7 days. Isn't that a sad end? It's a very tragic story, the life of Saul, the mighty king, the first king of Israel. What began with just a little bit of pride, what began with just a little bit of disobedience, what began as just a little bit of impatience, ends with great sin and judgment in his life. That's convicting to me. I struggle with just a little bit of pride sometimes. Here and there, I have a little bit of disobedience in my life. I tell myself, well, God will understand. It's a small thing. It's not a big deal. I'm not completely disobeying God. It's just a small amount of disobedience. I really struggle with impatience. It's hard to be patient and wait, isn't it? All of this in Saul's life took him from being God's number one man to being someone that God allowed him and his family to just be conquered and defeated by the enemy. Saul began to attempt excuses in his life rather than confession. Don't fall prey to that. Confess your pride to the Lord. Confess your impatience to the Lord. Confess your disobedience to the Lord. Don't make excuses for them. All of those excuses led to further failures for Saul. Saul inwardly not being right with God prevented him from ever being right with any other of God's people, especially David, who he needed to be right with. He couldn't get along with anybody else. And in the end, no matter his stature, no matter his natural abilities, without the power of God, Saul was nothing. And in contrast, while we see that both David and Saul were sinful men, David's heart to repent allowed for him to keep the kingdom while it was taken from Saul. Surely what Samuel tried to teach Saul was key to a blessed relationship with God. We find that in 1 Samuel chapter 15, verse 22. You don't have to go there unless you want to, but write that down and know that verse, 1 Samuel 15, 22. And Samuel said, this is him to Saul, "Hath the Lord as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifice as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to hearken than the fat of rams." That lesson is one we must all learn, so that our end does not meet that of Saul's, and our end may be more like that of David. To obey is better than to sacrifice. But human nature leads us to want to give sacrifice rather than obey, because outwardly we can be offering sacrifices, while inwardly we are disobedient in our hearts toward God. Well, this is the first book of Samuel. It's a message that teaches us that our life should be marked by trust in God, not trust in ourselves, not trust in our own wisdom, not lives that are marked by us being impressive. Rather, we should be impressed by God, and we should trust Him alone. See, God was the king Israel needed, not Saul and not David. God allowed it, but it is not what God intended. I'm not what you need spiritually. This particular church is not what you need spiritually. I'm glad you're here. I don't want you to quit coming here. Jesus is what you need spiritually. A daily relationship with Him. In His Word. In prayer with Him. Coming to know Him better than any person you know upon the face of this earth. That is what you need. Then you can be patient and obedient and wise, as we must be. Would you stand and pray with me?